Welcome back to Soul Back. This is the R&B podcast. Kyle here with Tom and Ed. What is going on, guys?
Well, what's up, players? It's been a minute since the whole triple threat has been in the room, so good to see my boys back.
What's up, Ed? I feel like I've been connected with you in a few weeks.
Holding it down, making sure that Kyle stays in line. Full-time job, you know how it goes.
Yep.
Well, for all the listeners out there that have been wondering where Tom's been, he's been raising that little boy of yours, Tom. How's that? How's the boy? How's Mav?
Man, he gets pissed when I turn the music off. He's going to be a soulful dude, I'll tell you right now.
Jeez.
I love it.
Well, Tom, while you were gone last week, Ed and I were talking about chicken, but something felt wrong because you weren't there to discuss it with us. But good news, we threw you under the bus and we laughed at the way you ate your chicken. So it's time for you to defend yourself when it comes to these chicken wings, because apparently
you eat it
like how it's displayed in option A of the picture, where you just take a bite of it and you chuck it away. Can you confirm this?
Listen, you don't want to, you know, if you're at a family function, you can't be getting barbecue sauce all up on your face. You got to be polite about how you eat your food. So you don't want to be digging in there to get the little pieces in between the bone. You just got to take a nice couple bites on the other portion and throw it away. Right, Ed?
Player, let me tell you something. If you know family like I know family, it is not a true family affair until your face is buried in that chicken and those bones and that sauce. If you come to our family and we're having crabs or something, you better eat every little succulent morsel out of those little things. You gotta hit every corner of the gristle to get the little meat off. If you got potato salad, you gotta scrape the plate. It's like nothing wasted, or you'll get shot, shanked up at the Bowser Castle. I'm telling you how it goes down. You can't have the chicken on the top and the bottom like you do around my grandparents. They'll punch in the stomach and talk about how they used to eat each other's like homework during the Depression because they didn't have any other food. So no, they'll throw the guilt trip on you.
I don't even know what to say after all that.
Wow. All right.
Kyle, can I make an observation, though? I was listening to some of these podcasts, right? And sometimes you brought my son. I hear him crying in the background, like faintly. And I thought to myself, wow, shout out to Aaliyah and Timbaland, the baby crying.
Oh, my God. Why do we give him a mic? Why do we turn it on?
I mean, this is an R&B podcast, so it's only right that we do that. But back to chicken, guys. Got a couple of questions here. Do you like your chicken wings dry or the saucy one that messes up your hands?
I like the dry. I don't like I'm weird about, see, here's a weird Ed pet peeve that I'm going to put out there. I don't like eating with my hands unless I absolutely have to. I eat my fries with a fork. I don't like stuff. Yes. I don't like stuff touching my hands. So when I eat, even wings, like the dry kind that has like the salt on it, I have like 74 napkins. So I eat one wing and I wipe my hands like 94 times and then I bite it again. Now I will eat all the chicken off of it, Tom. Not like you wasting all the chicken, all the hungry children going on around the world and you got all the chicken on the bone. But yeah, it's weird to have stuff on my hands.
Two things. Hold on. First of all, Ed, for those listening, Ed is the type of guy who eats his slice of pizza with a fork and knife. I'll tell you all you need to know.
No, I don't. Well, sometimes I do. It depends on the pizza. Anyway, proceed.
Second of all, I've actually been known to eat my chicken wings with a napkin in hand. So I use the napkin to hold the chicken wing so it doesn't get on my hands.
Oh, my God. How bougie. I'm not that bad.
I don't like stuff on my hands either. It's gross. There might not be a sink around where for you to, you know, wash it off quickly. Then you're just walking around with barbecue hand.
I mean, I can't hate because I'm kind of agreeing with you here, but I don't wear a napkin on my hand like a freaking catcher's mitt while I'm eating my chicken.
Well, it's not as bad as Kyle, who uses a fork.
Maybe. Hey, man, maybe even chopsticks at this point.
Oh, my gosh. Stop.
All right. And last question of the day. Let's not get into too much of a debate here, but true or false, Sweet Baby Ray's is the best barbecue sauce.
I mean, name five barbecue sauce brands.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm not big into sauces for real. Like, it's barbecue sauce, if it's on it, I'll eat it. I don't know if I can debate the top 10 barbecue sauce brands out there.
Well, I'll let you have this. We have Kraft.
No.
Bullseye.
No.
McDonald's barbecue sauce is pretty good, actually.
No, definitely not.
That's all I've got.
You can think of name Sweet Baby five. Ray. Sweet Baby Sweet, Ray I guess is the winner by default.
By it's default. Just like, look, play, it's like R&B in 2019. You go triple platinum because nobody else came out. So, there you go.
Man. Yep.
All right, guys, let's talk about some R&B here. But before we get started, Tom, can I do a weekly shout-out? Because I don't know if you have anything prepared, and if you do, we'll pass it to you after. But I need to make a weekly shout-out.
Who you got?
I need a shout-out Queen Naija's promo team. I think her fans run this promo page on Instagram, and they somehow found us and posted the clip of Ed and I talking about Queen Naija last week. And we got a lot of love on that. So I want to continue that love with these Queen Naija stans. So shout out to the Queen Naija stans.
Oh, my gosh. We calm down with the sucking up. But as we said last week, I am a fan of her. So looking forward to see what she does moving forward. I think there's a lot of potential there.
Yep. So, Tom, what else? Do you have anyone in mind?
I'll get my list up for, and I'll shout them out later on the episode. You always catch me off guard, man.
All right. Well, let's get into some music here. We didn't really have a lot that came out this week, but I do want to bring up a record that I think we may have talked about a little bit when it came out, but now that I've gotten a chance to digest it, that new Mary J. Blige song with Nas, Thriving. You guys have heard that one, right? Because I've tried liking it, and I still don't like it. And my boy Camper produced it, but something about it, it doesn't feel good to me.
I like it. It's definitely no Love Is All We Need type record. It doesn't feel like an instant classic. Well, for what it is, I thought it worked pretty well. It's a decent little, I feel like this, if I listen to the radio, which I don't, and it was the summertime, and I was riding around with the top down or the windows down, and it came on, I'd turn it up. Like, it's a decent song.
Yeah, Tom? I mean, I've been underwhelmed by Mary J, and I hate to say this because she's the queen, but for probably, over 10 years now, and obviously we have to change our expectations. Everything's not going to be a classic, but at least it's, I always feel like this, at least it's not trash, It's still something solid.
That's the best we can hope for, at least it's not trash.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I think there's just something really annoying about the beat. I can't even describe what it is. It sounds like an alarm going off for 4 minutes.
No, I know exactly what you mean, because that is the one thing that kind of throws me, and I feel like it kind of almost hurts the sonic chemistry between the two. So I'm with you on that, but I don't know. Yeah. There's something about the dynamic that kind of works.
Right. So, speaking of chemistry, can we give a shout out to Drake and Chris Brown for charting at like number 14 on the Billboard 100 with the new song No Guidance?
Absolutely not.
So, Tom, a lot of fans have been saying, the only reason why that song is doing so well is because of the Drake feature. And Team Breezy was pissed about that. But who in your mind are some other guaranteed hit makers from when you first started listening to music till now? Who are some go-to artists that immediately make it a hit? Are there any that come to mind?
Oh, I feel like it's a popularity contest at this point, Simon, about the music. You know that.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
To your point, Kyle, I think that it just changes throughout generations. There was a time that if you got a Babyface record, that joint was top three. It don't matter what. If he was writing the phone book, like, it was hot. If you got a Timbaland remix, oh, it's jumping to the top. If you got a Neptune joint, oh, it's flying up. If you got a Missy feature, like, there are always times, or a Jay-Z feature in the early 2000s, guaranteed to chart. Today, really, it's just your boy Aubrey, who, like I was saying before we got on the podcast, the dude can burp on your track and you're jumping up the charts five spaces. So that's just how it is. And it's due to, as Tom would say, popularity, because his contribution to that song, that sleepy contribution, absolutely not.
And Ed, you forgot about the number one contributor. Actually, there's two. Number one is my boy Ja Rule. But number two, because I heard the song earlier in the week, T-Pain, Blame It on the Alcohol. Like, I know Jamie Foxx is a part of that song, and that's his song, but that sounds like a T-Pain song to me.
No, you're right. And late 08, 09, going into 2010, if you had a T-Pain feature, it was going to fly up the chart. And you know how I feel about the Grim Reaper of R&B, so no need to go there.
You know what, though? As I think about it, and I'd love to hear your guys' thoughts, but my least favorite R&B era, aside from, I mean, the current era has some good stuff as well, but my least favorite in recent memory is that 2009-2010 era, because I think that's when T-Pain was still all over the radio, R&B was starting to become a little more electronic, and then that was also like the birth of the Frank Oceans and the Weekends of the world with that underground R&B. Man, that was a sad time for R&B, guys.
No, I agree. And although, as I said before, I do kind of defend The Weeknd and Frank Ocean in some spots. I think they got worse later on, but that's another conversation. But that 08, 09 era, and let me clarify by saying this, because I know people are going to be in my mentions. E.T. Bowser, you know what to do where you send your hate tweets. But we aren't saying that there was nothing good in that era, because in every era of R&B, there has been quality music. The problem with that era is that was the era where the quality started being almost intentionally suppressed, and the lesser quality was intentionally raised up. And then the line between R&B and hip hop got so murky that rap songs were being categorized as R&B and vice versa. And then everybody's auto-tuning. So you got Puffy fake singing on a song, and then this is an R&B song, and things just got so weird and bad. So I agree with you. 08, those early 2010s were some rough times. And we're just now starting to kind of get out of that and get some legit artistry on the charts.
Yep. Tom, what's your least favorite era of R&B aside from that era? I know you particularly love the crunk era, right?
That probably is it, man. That early 2000s to mid 2000s era, that crunk era where the sound shifted so drastically, I feel like is definitely, and then that allowed a lot of non-singers to come into the genre and have success. For me, as a 90s R&B fan, that time really was forgettable and really contributed to where we're at now, unfortunately.
No, you're right. The one thing I will say about that era, though, that I do, because at the time I hated it, and be glad that I wasn't around then with this podcast, because y'all would be really mad. You think I fuss about trap now? You listen to me fuss about Lil Jon then. But I think the difference between that era is we still had so much good stuff. We had, I mean, this is, even though he had Yeah, which I hated, we still had Confessions. We still had solid 5-star, 4.5-star R&B projects still coming out on the regular. So even though radio was getting ridiculous, and that's the era when I gave up on radio for good, thanks Sierra, but that's the era that I cut out that. We still got so much quality that to me it kind of balanced it out. By the end of the decade, though, it was just the scales had tipped and I couldn't deal with it.
All right. So
the craziest thing, though, about that Usher, that Yeah era, to this day, I hear Bad Girl more than I hear any other song from Confessions, even Yeah. So what does that tell you about the longevity of that, of the songs on that album?
Well, it just shows that, especially when it comes to the crunk stuff, and I said it back then, like, it's not a sound, it's a song that will be remembered. But I didn't feel like it was a song that would be, I don't know, what's the word that we say for it now? You know how we say everything is like a timeless classic. And I hate saying that because it's ridiculous. But when we label stuff that, that's a song that you can hear now and not just, I like it because it's nostalgia. I like it because it influenced and it continues to feel fresh and new. That stuff sounds like straight up 2003, long white tees, being in the club with the crunk juice, watching Flavor of Love on VH1. Like, it's a part of an era. That's my same problem. Y'all gonna be mad. That's my same problem with New Jack Swing. It's great for its era, and it's nostalgic for its era, but when you hear it, it feels like that era. It doesn't really have this sweeping sound that I feel like some of the other genres, well, the other subgenres of R&B were able to have. They're going to be mad, but it's true.
I'm sorry, Kyle. I don't mean to hijack this, but Kyle, maybe you could answer this. What's the difference between Yeah and This Is How We Do It?
I was just going to say that. I don't really think there is a lot of a difference. I mean, you guys are telling me that Yeah wasn't a timeless record, but you play that today, the white folks are going crazy over that song. Just
no,
like they
no,
did with This Is How We Do It.
No, you're missing my point. I'm not saying that it's not. Yeah, it's a very influential record, probably Usher's biggest. If you play it, people will go crazy. But my point that I'm saying is that the sound is a moment in time in the era. When you hear Yeah, Goodies, all that stuff sounds exactly the same, which I had a problem with then. But the sound sounds like the era. I'm not saying that you can't throw on Goodies and people go crazy for Lord knows whatever reason. But the sound is rooted in nostalgia. If someone made a song that sounded with a Goodies beat today, you're going to say, oh, that sounds like Goodies. Oh, that sounds like 2003. Like, it's not going to be something that is a totality or evolution of R&B. But this is how we do it. To me, it's a little different because This Is How We Do It is just a little bit more hip-hoppy anyway.
I guess, but if you played that on the radio today, people would automatically say it's 1995.
What, This Is How We Do It? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about the sound, not necessarily the song.
I don't know. That sounds like a song that came from 1995.
My question was, like, not the sound. It was like, how come, Yeah, you're considering gimmicky for the moment, but how come This Is How We Do It is considered timeless?
So you're saying...
I think they fall under the same spectrum, really.
I don't know. I don't know the answer, so I'm asking.
No, I don't know. I feel like, and again, I'm saying that for both, you can compare both as Yeah being the This Is How We Do It of the early 2000s. So they are similar there. But what I was discussing was the sound. If you're talking about the actual songs, then yeah, they compare in that way. Okay. But I feel like if you took the This Is How We Do It beat, it doesn't sound as narrow as the beat to Yeah. Yeah sounds like 2003, 2004. This Is How We Do It sounds like more of a 90s. It's like the range is bigger. And it doesn't sound so encapsulated into one moment. But I'm splitting hairs.
I guess. Now, guys, we talked about some of our least favorite eras of R&B. And, man, I got to give a shout-out to Def Jam from 1999 and, like, 2000, 2001. 112. Actually, it didn't even come out on Def Jam. Did it come out, 112's third album? That was on Bad Boy, right?
That was still Bad Boy. The Def Jam album was later.
Well, let's just say 1999 to 2001 was a good era, and then when Def Jam came out with their 2001, 2002 albums with our favorite 112 album, Hot and Wet, as well as, and you guys will be excited about this one, Cisco's second album. That was not a good album.
It's funny you mention that. That was a hot discussion on the Soul and Stereo Cypher on Facebook earlier this week. And people really, and including my brother-in-law, there are some big fans of that album. I do not know why. Because that, if I ever do a list of albums, the most disappointing albums after their, like, great debut albums, like the worst sophomore albums, that Cisco album is right up there. And this is coming from a big Cisco fan who ranked his debut 5 stars. That second album is not good. It's so rushed. But I don't know if I would blame Def Jam for that. I think that was more on him. Because we had some decent stuff in the 2001 era. It wasn't until the mid-2000s that things got kind of iffy.
I know. Def Jam did put out Ashanti's debut around that era.
Oh,
so I can't
no.
hate on them too much.
I walked into that one.
Tom, can we talk about Siskel's second album? Because didn't you call it like the worst album you've ever heard?
I hate to say something that strongly, that negatively, but it's something I could never play again. It's probably up there with another album that we talk about often as being an album we can't listen to. I don't want to say, since we just recently had these people on our podcast. So we'll keep it moving.
Oh my gosh, you got to tell me off air who that is, because I can't even think.
You know who that is. It's recent.
Well, Ed, I'll let you know. The album was nowhere near close to perfect.
Oh my gosh. Talk about snitching and blowing up your spot.
All right, let's
let's move on.
Can I get my shout outs?
Yes, save the podcast, please.
First shout out, a big fan of ours who's always active on our Facebook page, SG Snow. She's been down with the site for a while. Wanted to give her a quick shout out. My other shout out is to, and I really thought of this guy, Kyle, when you posted that Quavo thing that he's making an R&B album. I want to give a shout out to The Hamburglar.
Who?
The Hamburglar.
Like the McDonald's dude?
Yep.
Yes. You don't know who this is?
Yep. And you want to know why? Look it up right now, Kyle, on Google. Why? Because that's what I feel like people are doing to R&B. They're coming in acting like they love it, but they're just stealing from it.
They're just robbing away, taking our nourishment, and stealing it for themselves.
So, The Hamburglar, shout out to you.
Wow.
Can we start calling Quavo The Hamburglar?
Kyle, do you know who Grimace is?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay, good. Just check.
Why did you ask that?
Well, if he has to know who The Hamburglar is, he should know who... He wouldn't know who Grimace is either, I thought.
No, I know. I just, when you said The Hamburglar, I thought you meant someone on Facebook, and I'm like, who?
No.
That's what we're calling Soul Child these days?
That's not Soul Child's alter ego.
Okay. Oh my god. Player.
Although, The Hamburglar kind of looks like the Pied Piper. Circa 2001. Ed?
Well, he loves hanging out with little kids too, so.
Oh boy. Keep it moving.
And once R. Kelly got out of jail, he went straight to McDonald's, so he knows what's up.
There, look, player, there might be something here.
Oh my goodness. Can we move on? Ed, right, do you have any shout outs you want to make from the Cypher?
Yeah, let me shout out a couple of good people from the Cypher while you guys are just running this thing into the ground. Shout out my man Nick Eden, who has been very, very vocal and a great participant in the Cypher as of late. So he's always been holding it down. Shout out to my boy. I mean, there are tons of people in the Cypher, but he comes to mind first and foremost of like recent contributors who've really added some great combo. Oh, and it's a little biased, but I gotta shout out my cousin too, Cameron Brown. What up, Cam? Cam always comes through with some great discussion points as well. If you're not in the Soul and Serial Cypher and you want to get on Facebook and talk about music and not worry about trolls, because I'll take care of them for you, shout us out.
Nice.
So basically what you're saying is if someone disagrees with your opinion, you just block them?
I mean, that's what I do on the podcast. I like hitting you when you start talking, so yeah. It's a thing of beauty.
Guys, there's a couple of new R&B albums on the way. Let's go through them a little bit. We have Chris Brown and Raheem Devon both set to drop in late June. I think it's the 28th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yep. One of them I'm looking forward to. One of them I'm not. Guess.
Well, one of them has 37 classics on it, so I think you'll be okay.
I think you just answered your own question.
Jagged Edge is set to release their new album July 15th. We talked about them earlier. Oh, wait, we didn't. A Jagged Love Story is set to come out. It will be a double album. I know, Tom, you're really excited about that one.
Wait a minute. It's going to be a double album? I missed this.
Yep.
That was exclusively revealed on this podcast a couple weeks ago, Ed.
Man, I miss. See, this is what happened when even one of the members of the podcast misses out. Man.
Yep.
I got to go back and listen to that episode.
And Elle Varner will be dropping her EP / album. We'll get into that discussion shortly. But that's coming out, it looks like July 12th is the date, and that will be on E1. So let's talk about this. We have had so much confusion over what this project is, Elevation, if it's an album, if it's an EP. I can state the facts here, Tom. It has 9 songs. So does that make it an album or an EP?
I don't know. 9 is like the cutoff, I feel. I mean, that to me is an album. The cutoff to me for an EP is like 6, 7 maybe. You know, I think 8 is like the lowest number you could call it an album. Even that's a little low, but this is a full-length EP, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what they're calling typically, first of all, it's not a full-length EP. That's like saying a hamburger-shaped hot dog. Like, it's either it is or it ain't. Like, what are you talking about? But, I mean, for the most part, an EP is kind of classified by the total, like, the track, like, the total running time. And if it's 9 songs, more likely than not, unless these are going to be a bunch of 2-minute songs, which I know are not unheard of these days, this is probably an LP, from what it sounds like to me. But I don't know why we're going back and forth on this thing. It's fine. Like, LP is fine. Prince came out with 9 song albums. MJ came out with 9 song albums. I prefer shorter stuff because it makes definitely for a more total and complete listening experience. Cousin Chris. But anyway. So, I mean, you know, we've talked about Elle Varner before on the podcast, so I won't get into that. So I hope for the best. And I will call this an LP. I don't know what everybody else is calling it. That's going to be an album.
Well, Tom, I got to call you out because over the last couple of podcasts, you've been saying Chris Brown has made no impact on the genre and none of his songs are timeless. But let me spin it to you this way here. And Ed, I hope you're ready. Mm-hmm. Maybe, just maybe, Cousin Chris is the reason why Elle Varner has changed this from an LP to a full-length EP. Because if Chris Brown is calling his album an album and it has like 50 songs on it, it would be embarrassing if Elle Varner just put out a 9-song album. So she's like, oh, well, I got to change it to it being now called an EP so it doesn't get lost in the shuffle.
Player, let me tell you something. I have never met Elle Varner. I don't know nothing that goes on that lady life. But I can pretty much guarantee that she is not living and breathing by what Cousin Chris is doing on Instagram. I think the LP decision or EP decision or whatever it is, it's probably just some marketing ploy deal. Cousin Chris, whatever. We always got to bring that guy up.
We love that guy. So, guys, I know you guys both have to go, so I thank you guys for joining me here as I venture out to do my solo interview for this podcast. But before you guys leave, can we get into the Play It Pleases really quickly?
Of course.
All right.
All right, so as I mentioned last week, or we talked about Ed, DJ Khaled threw a temper tantrum at his label's office because his album did not hit number one. A lot of it was because he had some endorsement deal going on, and for some reason it didn't count towards the Billboard 200 charts, so he ended up at number 2 instead of number 1. Tyler, the Creator, got that honor. Now, he's set to file a massive lawsuit against Billboard for their wrongdoing. And I read somewhere that this upcoming week's chart, DJ Khaled is at number 1 now. So, justice has been served.
Look at what happens to Mr. Motivator, our pop culture patron of positivity. All you got to do when you don't get your way, kids, is whine and threaten lawsuits. And your terrible album, too, can be linked at number 1. What a horrible example he is. And you know what else? Keep your baby at the house. Tired of you driving your baby. Every time I see you, you got that poor baby standing in some short set at the BET Awards. Hot as it is. Probably no sunscreen on the baby. Looking miserable. Take the baby home, and you go home, too. I'm sick of DJ Khaled.
Oh, man. That's rough.
Wow. Tom, are we going to name the podcast after your son at some point?
Probably not, but we will get him as a guest. Maybe in one of the lighter weeks when we can't line someone up, we'll get him to see what he can say. It'll probably be more relevant than what DJ Khaled would have to say, I'll tell you that much.
I can guarantee you that. I'd rather hear Mav babble than DJ Khaled babble.
And I'm willing to bet Mav's speaking will be more coherent than Quavo, so I think we're off to a good start.
That is a guarantee.
All right. So the next Play It Please, Ed, we're going to have to bring it back to Chris Brown. And this might actually be a Soul and Stereo love letter as well. So Chris Brown's ex-girlfriend, Karrueche, posted a picture with her and her new boyfriend, minding her own business, and then your boy, cousin Chris, comes in, comments, and says, "Yo, no disrespect, but you need to upgrade your boo. He looks like... I don't even know what... He looked like he was like a mannequin or something. Maybe you can fill us in on what he said, but it was hilarious."
First of all, I saw this raggedy post from this raggedy human being, and you downplayed this message. Because first of all, there were like three messages where he says... Basically, Karrueche, you fine, but your man ugly. And it takes three posts to talk about how ugly he is. And then at the end, like, LOL, just playing. He said that he looks like a mannequin. Do you know how he spelled mannequin? M-A-N-I-K-I-N.
Oh, my God.
What? That's a maniki. Like, what is that? This human being, how many times, ladies, in this era of women empowerment, how many times are you going to defend this dude? And I'm not even talking about the beating of Rihanna. Whatever. We're not talking about that because we're going to move beyond that because I know people getting their feelings and y'all won't get over it and she got over it. Whatever. I'm not talking about the past. I'm talking about every week Kyle brings up some foolishness that this man is doing. Objectifying the woman that he couldn't keep in the first place. Imagine if, ladies, if your ex, you post a picture of you and your man, and your ex is on the comments trolling your man. You would be upset. So why is it different because this dude came out with an album you liked 10 years ago? How is this different than the same? It's the same thing we fuss about with the R. Kelly stuff, where people say, "I don't see how y'all let him go on this long doing all these terrible things." It's the same way y'all let Chris Brown go along doing these terrible things. Because you like his little wax songs. So just admit it. Like, don't make excuses. Just say, "I really liked Run It. Because when I went to high school, that was my song." I would admit that than pretending that this dude is not out here embarrassing himself and women on a weekly basis. I ain't making it up. Go listen to the podcast. Every week, Kyle's got some crazy note from cousin Chris and his shenanigans. I'm waiting for them to come defend this one.
Good news. I'm looking on the internets right now, and Chris Brown actually did make a statement regarding this after the fact. Tom, you'll be excited about this one. He claimed he was hacked.
Oh, really?
And then the news came out today that he's expecting his second child with another woman. It's all coming together for him.
Yep. Good things do happen to good people.
And this is the folks I call family.
All right. Last Play It Please for you guys before we get out of here. As you guys know, the NBA Finals have concluded now. Big shout-outs to the Toronto Raptors, Go Canada, for winning the NBA Finals. But one of the more popular aspects of this NBA Finals was the cameo of Drake every 30 seconds while the game was playing. Ed, I know you were excited to see Drizzy Drake.
Player, why do they have the camera on? Like, do people think that he's like a team owner? Like, what are you talking about? This is what I said, and I said this on social media. You remember when we were in school and we used to have group projects? And it would be there would be like four or five people in the group. And there was always one person in that group who did not come to one meeting, did not contribute one idea, did not do anything. You would call him, he wouldn't show up, he would not be in the library, he didn't do nothing. But the day of the project, he come bouncing into class, be the one to do all the talking. And then when you get this A, he's like, yeah, look at the A we got. The dude who did the most talking and the least amount of work, Aubrey Drake. Aubrey is terrible. Kyle, your countryman is terrible.
But Tom, wasn't it a brilliant release strategy by him? He pretty much said if the Raptors win, he'll drop two new songs. And they did win, so he's dropped two new songs.
He's sure, gonna drop me anyway. What does that have to do with anything?
And Ed, what is the verdict? Yeah. Are they good?
No. Did you just start listening to Drake? No. I mean, it's...
All right.
Here's the thing with Drake, and I don't want to get too deep into rap, but the problem I have with Drake is kind of comparable to the problem I have with some newer R&B artists. And coincidentally, Drake has this problem when he does his quote-unquote R&B. There was a time in hip-hop and R&B where songs were connected with emotion. I mean, and sometimes it was crazy emotion. DMX sounded like a lunatic, but he made you feel his songs. When I was listening to that Drake song this morning, it just sounds like he's just reading lyrics from a sheet of paper. And I know that's what he's literally doing because that's what everybody does. But the artistry is to put the emotion in it. So you feel in every syllable and you're hanging off every bar and just, oh, and the cadence and going up and down and flowing. But if you're just reading, hey, I'm the best thing that ever did something and I am from Canada and hey, I got a whole lot of money and I had a baby and I hid the baby from the world. Like, if you just do that, you're just reading. And the beat's hot, so no one pays attention because the beat's hot. But there's no emotion in anything. And that's what I feel like is hurting both rap and R&B right now. Y'all's got some great beats, but you got zero energy.
Fair enough. Tom, before we get out of here, do you know the difference between Da Baby and Little Baby?
I know dem babies.
What? Are y'all saying words? What?
That's all the two I know. Artists, Ed, Little Baby and Da Baby.
Oh, you're talking about the rapper. Yes, I know Da Baby. And I know Little Baby.
What's the difference?
Yes, I know both of them. No, they're not the same person.
They're running out of ideas, guys. We had Nas, and now we have Little Nas X. There's no names left in the encyclopedia to use.
There are no more names, so we just have to start recycling names.
Yep.
I can't wait to come out with my rap name, AZ Rakim, and tear the world up.
Because they already had Baby. Don't you know the original Baby? Birdman?
No. Yeah, we know Baby, and then it was Lil Baby, and now it's Da Baby.
Well, I knew we were running out of ideas when Big Sean was calling himself B.I.G., but what are you going to do?
What?
Oh, I know what I can do. Turn that garbage off.
All right. Let's focus back on the website and the podcast here. Ed, what is going on with SoInStereo.com?
Oh, my gosh. You got me turned up today. Well, I know that by the time this post will be maybe a week or so removed, but in celebration of Father's Day, we've gone back to look at 10 songs over the history of hip-hop that taught us the importance of fatherhood. Hip-hop always celebrates the moms, and really social media loves celebrating the moms, but there have been plenty of songs out there that celebrates dads and uplifts dads, so I was like, we're going to show some dads some love. And now that we got a new dad in the house on the podcast, I'm sure he can relate. So this is an opportunity to show our dad some love. So check that out if you missed it. It's still on the site, Soul and Stereo. Show you from Father some love. And again, by the time this drops, we should be having some new album reviews because it's a lot of new stuff coming out on the horizon.
Cool. And Tom, what's going on with You Know I Got Soul?
Bit of a slow week for new music, but there's a couple new things. Neda Brio put out an EP. We have the news on Jagged Edge's upcoming album. Our boy Sean Stockman has a new single out. And Marco McGinnis, new artist, signed to, I think, Interscope, put out his new EP, Immerse. Check out all those, and Gallant has a new single, too. So a few things have come out. Be sure to check them out.
Dope. So that seems to be it for you guys on the podcast. I'm going to go bring in my special guest now, but we'll talk next week. I have a lot of things lined up for us for the podcast. So, guys, just keep it posted. But Ed and Tom, I'll see you guys next week, and I will bring in the special guest now. Like I said, every week we try to bring in someone special, someone who has brought soul back, and I'm really excited for this one. He was part of the highest grossing R&B and hip-hop tour of this year, and he's done some big things outside of the music industry with his company, AdWizar. So I'd like to welcome Spectacular Smith from Pretty Ricky. What's going on, Spec?
Hey, man, everything is fine, man. I appreciate you for having me on the show.
For sure. So we want to talk about definitely AdWizar, but let's start off with some Pretty Ricky, because I know we have a lot of readers that have followed you guys since the beginning. So, and I've been meaning to ask you guys this for a long time. On the song Your Body, whose idea was it to have Yes Sir chanted all over the chorus? Was that you?
Yeah, I think that I said the Yes Sir one time, and it was like, oh, man, I think that sounds dope. So let's add more Yes Sirs in there. So we just pretty much just kept putting them over and over again in the hook. So as we was making it flow, we just felt like the ending of the hook should have the Yes Sir on the end. So it was a pretty strong record, man. From the first time we created it and finished it up, we knew it was a hit.
Yeah, for sure. And I saw you guys perform it on the Millennium Tour, and everyone was reacting to it very strongly. But let's talk about this Millennium Tour for a bit. It's been a while since Pretty Ricky has really hit the road. I know you guys have done some spot dates here and there, but what was that like for you to get back on the road and, you know, be a part of such a big show?
For me, I don't know about the other guys, but for me, it was really nerve-wracking at the beginning because we came up with all new routines, and it was something that we never did before, and I'm a perfectionist when it comes to my craft on stage and things like that, so I just really wanted to make sure I was coming in strong. So I was pretty nervous, man. I was pretty nervous because it was dance moves I just was learning, man. And with anything, just doing something for the first time all over again after not really being in that type of atmosphere and so long and that many people and so long, even though we was doing little spot dates and things like that, performing together. But we wasn't in a sold-out arena every single night. So, yeah, it was a little nerve-wracking at the beginning, but once we kind of got through all the craziness and everything started rolling, everything was pretty smooth sailing from that point forward.
Right. And when you guys got the offer to be a part of this tour, because I'll be honest with you, Spec, you know, with our audience, when we had posted about the tour and the dates, people were a little hesitant. Some thought it might be a little too soon for a tour like this. Some felt like, you know, are they ready to really get back on the road because we haven't seen any of these guys in a while. We weren't even sure how successful it would be, but obviously, case in point, it did very well. So what were your expectations going into that tour?
Yeah, honestly, I already knew what it was going to be. Once I heard that it was B2K and Pretty Ricky, I mean, everybody else was definitely huge at the time in our generation. But I know for sure B2K and Pretty Ricky never shared the stage together. And I know how huge those guys was back in the day. And I know how big we were back in the day. So I feel like both of us together on one stage, I just felt like it was going to be pandemonium regardless. And then you have the rest of the guys who bring such a amazing experience with their music too, the Lloyds and the Bobby V's and Mario's and Ying Yang Twins and Chingy's. Like, those guys had major hits. So just all that together, I just knew it was going to actually hit. I actually tried to do something similar and do my own tour dates by myself with my marketing company and do the promotion ourselves, because all the promoter really doing is re-putting an offer in front of our fans who already love us and interested in us and sell tickets to our fans. So I felt like, you know, it was a challenge, but I felt like it was something that my company could accomplish, putting the right package together. So I was already on that, but my brothers didn't really understand or I felt believed, or they just wanted really more like the check up front. So we right. didn't really do it. And then Millennial Tour came, and then it just showed how powerful it was. Like you said, it was the second high engrossing tour of the year, which is unbelievable.
Right. And it's cool because, of course, 90s R&B fans, they love that era. And it doesn't seem like the 2000s era gets as much love, maybe because it still feels like it was yesterday. But what did you learn about that era and, you know, your time in the industry on this tour? Because when you're going through it at the time, you probably don't
realize a lot of what's going on, but now that you've been able to reflect back on that 2000s era, what do you remember about it?
I mean, it was a beautiful era. I honestly wish I could jump in a time machine just to go back and just vibe to that era and appreciate it more. Because I just feel like the music nowadays is not that and, you know, don't have that same feel as the music back in the day have. I just felt like it was more of a vibe. And I really miss it. So that's why I knew it was a huge need for what we was actually offering to the world for that era, which was the 2000s to the late 2000s. I felt like people was missing that, and they wasn't getting that in no tour, no place at all. So now when this came about, I felt like it was going to do what it did. So I was already a believer before it even happened.
Right. And the thing with Pretty Ricky is your sound, which you guys kept everything in-house, which I think contributed to you guys being able to, you know, keep your sound and keep it strong. But, you know, of course, you're very heavy into business and all of that stuff. So there's always an argument on our end with artists. Are they supposed to evolve with the times, or are they supposed to just keep their core audience happy? Like, how do you balance the two as an artist?
Yeah, I think you do kind of both. I think you do your old school vibe, you know, and then you kind of like get up to date on what's going on, so you don't really get lost in the shuffle. But you kind of do both, right? And you kind of jumble it together, where it's basically both coming together and making that you know, mesh in between both worlds. And that's kind of what we did with our new music that's coming up. We took the old sound and we bring it current to the new sound, and it's still a Pretty Ricky sound altogether. So I think we did pretty good with that, with the new music that's coming.
What do you think the key is to, because I've seen artists throughout the years who try to dibble and dabble into new songs or new sounds, and they end up alienating their core audience. Like, what's the key to making sure that the core audience is still happy?
Yeah, I think don't go too far away from what your true sound is. Like, I truly believe in that. Like, I don't believe in, you know, having a certain sound and then, like, totally, like, just so-called reinventing yourself, and then everything just goes left. And everybody's like, yo, what the hell? You know, I don't like the new sound. Like, I think it's too new, which I fell in love with you for a certain reason. So I think that keeping that same vibe, but just switching it up, right? It might be newer beats, but the same texture, the same tone, like the same everything, but just like a different beat behind it that's current. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of ways to switch it up. There's no true formula for it, but I definitely think staying true to who you are and the sound that made you you, because I feel like the people who love it back then is the same people who will love it right now. But as long as it feels fresh and new, people will always love who you are as an artist and that sound that you bring into the table.
Right. Now, with this Millennium Tour that you guys embarked on, obviously there was a lot of nostalgia involved in that, and nostalgia is a great selling point, but is it a challenge to sell them on something new when it's not nostalgia? Like, what's the thought process there? Because obviously you guys went platinum, so you have a million fans out there. How do you bring them on board in 2019 with your music?
I really don't think it's a battle. I think they're looking for us versus us trying to sell them. They're looking for us to sell them, right? I mean, I don't think that it's something that we have to convince somebody about. Like, to this day, people are like, Pretty Ricky, when are you guys releasing new music? Like, we miss y'all. We miss y'all type of music. Like, I would love to hear Ashanti and Ja Rule make a new album together, like, and have that same old school feel, right? And you can, like I said, make it a little current, but still give me that old school Ja Rule and Ashanti feel. I would love that. I would love a Trick and Trina album with that old school, you know, feel, that with a little bit of new school, right? And so I definitely love the way it felt back then, and I feel like I really feel like it's going to come back around, because everything comes back around. And yeah, I think it's going to come back around, and this tour show and prove that people are missing and want to jump in that time machine and go back to that feel good music from back in the day.
Yeah, I'm with you. And a term that I really hate, but a lot of music fans in general use is dated, like a song sounds dated. And, you know, I think we need to get to a point where we can just appreciate a song for what it is. If it's good, then it's good, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So you talked about this new Pretty Ricky album. I know you guys have been working on it for a minute. Is that actually coming out? Because I know it's been, you know, on hold for a couple of years now, I guess.
Yeah. So with us is just really making sure we come out the right way, making sure everything is what you was talking about earlier, make sure everything is the sound that we wanted, making sure we're not getting lost in that, and we're giving a quality product. Like everything we always did when we released music, we felt like if it's not a single, we don't want to actually even create it. Like we wouldn't even follow through with a song, and we felt like it wasn't single material. So we're just taking our time with it, man. And as soon as it released, definitely the fans are going to love it. And I promise that.
For sure. And Pretty Ricky's last album came out in 2009. I believe that's when you guys left the major situation and went independent. So, and that album didn't end up selling as well as your first two. So with that said, would you have been okay with ending the Pretty Ricky run with that album? Because I know you're on to different ventures now with your business, but in terms of Pretty Ricky, do you think this new album was necessary for you?
Okay, yeah. So the one with Tipsy on it was back, like I said, back then we was under management, which was, you know, my father at the time, and he didn't really make the best business decisions. So even the label we went with, you know, it really didn't fit Pretty Ricky brand, and we kind of forced it. We had the brand new member we was trying to add in and try to make it mesh, but in reality, it just never meshed together. And that's back to what I'm saying now is making sure everything lines up correctly, the strategy, the music, you know, the partnerships on who we partner with, the touring, like everything has to go together. And that's why we're taking our time, because I felt like the third album and what we did and how we did it, I felt like we could have did it a lot better, and we learned a lot of lessons from that third release.
Right. Now, a couple more Pretty Ricky questions before we move on to what you're currently working on, but Static Major, of course, we celebrate him on this website, on this podcast, and you worked heavily with him on the first two Pretty Ricky albums. Give me a Static Major story.
I think the best Static Major story, it's so many, honestly, I can't even get one. Well, I would just talk about when we first met him. When we first met him, we was like cocky as hell, man. Because we know we wrote all our hits. And the label was actually trying to pair us up with a songwriter. So they gave us one songwriter. It was like a guy who wrote all Trey Songz stuff. And we was just like, we ain't feeling that, right? It was just like, nah, we good. We don't want no songwriters. And then they introduced us to Neo, and we was like, this time Neo wasn't even who he was right now. But he was like, we don't want no songwriters. We'd rather write our own stuff, right? So we didn't go with Neo. And then they put us in there with Static Major. This is a hood guy, you know, it was like, well, this guy with his big old chain on with Louisville on his chain. It's just like, man, whatever, man. You ain't dealing with this guy either, man. I was just like, we just want to make our own songs. So the label call was like, man, you guys need to just try it out, just see how you guys feel about it. It's like, man, we good. Like, we don't want no writer. We don't care about what songs he wrote, blah, blah, blah. So we ended up leaving or something, or he left or something like that. He was like, man, put him back in. So we end up talking, and then, like, we just started making some bangers, man. We gave it a chance, and we clicked so hard. I mean, we had Banger Out Your Body. We had Juicy. We had On the Hotline. I mean, when he had to beat the production for On the Hotline, he was like, yo, let me play something for you. Let me play something for you. So, all right, cool. Now, remind you, the second album was completely done. We was finished. And Static came in and was like, let me play something for you. Let me play something for you. So he played the beat. I mean, we listened to that beat for 3 hours, just bopping our head like, ooh, like this, ooh, like it's going crazy. Like, yo, this beat. So we listened to this for like 3 hours, and then we ended up creating On the Hotline, which was our album was completed. So that was the last song on the album. And we was like, man, we're going to make this the single, because the single was Love Like Honey before that. And then when that got created that night, we ended up making On the Hotline the single. And I was good. And then Juicy, when he played the beat for Juicy, he was like, oh, yeah. He said that the beat came on literally for like 6 seconds. And he was like, oh, I got something. I got something. He was like, can you make it juicy for me? And I was like, ooh, that's hard. I was like, yo, that's it. And then we created Juicy. But, yeah, man, Static was the man. He was definitely the truth for sure.
Yeah, for sure. And on the Hotline, of course, people still play it to this day. So you guys have made some records that have had longevity. So shout-out to Static and shout-out to Pretty Ricky as well.
For sure, man. Bless me.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Now, Spec, let's talk about your adjustment from being in the music industry and, you know, having number one records to, you know, and it goes with every artist. There's an up period and then there's a down period. What was that down period like for you? And how were you able to, you know, come to terms with it and get to the point where you are now?
Yeah, so the down period was me just really figuring out ways to maximize the opportunity I had in front of me. Because a lot of people feel like, oh, it's over for me. And they kind of look at the glass half empty. And I'm an optimistic person, like, everything that I see, I figure out what is the good in it. And the good was I was this guy who understood business, and I understood how to make one and one a five. I understood that. Mm-hmm. I understood how to solve problems, which was social media. And by me figuring out how to solve problems, I could figure out algorithms, and I could figure out ways to use psychological methods to get people to click follow or retweet or reply. And I use what I knew people liked and what would make people move, and I use that to build social media accounts. So I knew I had a brain, and I knew that I can utilize it in certain ways, and I figured out how to make money off of social media. So I took who I was as a celebrity, and I started connecting with individuals that I actually knew that had a massive audience. So once I figured out a way that I could make money on Twitter, became top five in advertising dollars out of 100 million users on the Twitter platform, and created a cat called Grumpy Cat, which is now worth over $100 million. And once I did that, I kind of transitioned to helping out different celebrities who didn't actually know how to monetize their social channels, and started signing them on. Once I had a system I could do at scale, I created a company called AdWizard. I started bringing these guys on. I started making these guys $20,000, $60,000 a month, and started crushing it for these guys. And when I did that, you know, I became one of the fastest growing companies in America with the Inc. 5000 list out of Inc. You know, they Inc. magazine put together the top 5000 growing companies out of 18 million registered companies in the world. And I was our ranked number 262 on the list. So when I figured that out, I started really taking on these artists, man, and kind of transitioned from artist to now I help personality brands and inspiring talent become famous on social media while telling their story to the world and increasing their network through monetizing their followers. And pretty right. much that's what we do right now, you know. And even launched the brands too. Right. So they knew, these brands knew I had a bunch of celebrities, and they came to me saying, hey, like, I want to actually, you know, use your celebrities to sponsor my product or endorse my product. And we ended up doing Maddie J, one of my partners at the time, ended up doing a campaign called the Dabbing Santa Sweater campaign. And within literally from launch, from zero, from scratch, no product to 30 days out to launch, we ended up doing $1.2 million in gross sales and over $2 million in 60 days. So now we take that same proven strategy and formula, and now we help launch products for different e-commerce brands, Fortune 500 companies, and really getting their product out to the masses. And then we took all those formulas, and everybody that I understood that, you know, couldn't afford, you know, doing a campaign with me for $35K and up, for influencer marketing campaign, I actually created a academy called AdWizard Academy, where now I actually teach, you know, people who are aspiring entrepreneurs or guys who actually have a six-figure business, want to get to seven-figure businesses, and I'm coming in the game and really changing the way you actually learn, right? And having seven-figure earners, guys who have eight-figure businesses, nine-figure businesses, teach in my program and teach these individuals on how they can do it themselves. So versus us doing it as an agency, we show you how to do it as an actual business owner or aspiring entrepreneur, and you actually do it yourself. And we teach you through seven-figure earners and my expert team, and I'm teaching in my program also. And we just change the way, you know, people actually learn in this day and age.
Right. Steck, I think that's super cool, just knowing that you came from Pretty Ricky and you guys were on top of the world, but you had to kind of start from scratch, start from the bottom and climb your way back up. And I know a lot of that has to do with checking your ego at the door and understanding you're going into a new business. You have to learn and relearn again. Was that a challenge at all for you?
It was definitely a challenge. It was a challenge because I was growing so fast as a company. And imagine like making 200 grand, right? 200 grand by yourself, just like running your own operation, not caring about nobody else to say, hey, light bulb goes off and say, I should do this for other people also. And then going from $200,000 to $2 million within a year, just because you just added on, let me help other people. And then Facebook changes something, and then 80% of your revenue drops literally overnight. And then you as an entrepreneur have to realize you have all of these employees now. I have 15 employees. I have a mortgage. I have car payments. I have a family. I have all these people that's dependent on me. So I decided to just self-learn, right? I didn't go to school for none of this stuff. I just went to Harvard after all the success. But before all this, I didn't have no education at all. I just graduated high school, and that was it, and became famous from music. But going into business, I didn't have any training and anything. I was talking to Puff, having a meeting with Puff, and he was asking me, he was like, yo, you did all this with no training, no, like, nobody, no education? I was like, nah. You know, everything was self-taught. Like, I literally went in and took every seminar. I went to every seminar. I went to every conference. I went to bought every program. I got consultants. I got mentors. I did mastermind groups. I joined the organization called EO. I got an operational system called the Entrepreneur Operational System, which I teach in my program. And I had to learn all this stuff, books. I read over 100 books, and I had to grow as fast. My brain had to grow as fast as my business was growing. And, yeah, it was definitely a challenge, just to answer your question.
Right. And with AdWizard, you guys do a lot, deal with, you know, making sure that artists understand that their brand has value. And I think that's one of the challenges for consumers and music fans, is what they feel like once the artist isn't in the mainstream or on the radio anymore, there's no value to that artist unless it's like a nostalgia tour or something like that. But what you're saying is there's actual value in an artist's brand?
There's value in anyone who built a following, no matter who you are. If you built a following and you have a followers that would engage with you, then you can turn that into money. If you really think about what even my company does, what any company does that involves influencers and marketing, these advertisers pay us, right? And then we pay the influencers to promote their product, and they get an ROI on it. That's why I get paid seven figures and eight figures in campaigns every time I launch a campaign, because they know that these influencers are going to give them an ROI, which is a return on their investment. So if you as an influencer or celebrity or public figure, whatever you want to call it, was to create your own product and market to your own people, then you are able to see the fruits and the benefits of you taking the time out and growing your audience the way you did, right? And all that hard work you put in and growing your audience, either you're in the studio or you're on tour or you're doing viral videos, whatever you're doing, you're able to take that fan base and use it for your own business, right? Then having all these companies milk you out of your audience, and then you only got paid that one time. If you look at Rihanna, right? Rihanna got her cosmetic line. She's one of the richest females in the world right now. It's not because of music. Right. It's because she took her own audience and she launched her own product and marketed to her audience. That's why she became who she is.
Right.
Kylie Jenner, dope. She did the same thing. She's not Kylie Jenner, the boss and almost a billionaire because she was just on Instagram all day. She grew this massive. She got attention, right? And once you get the attention, you turn the attention into money and revenue. And that's exactly what she did. She turned her attention into money through a product, and it was her cosmetic line. The same thing, Kylie Cosmetics or whatever she called it. And she turned that into an empire. And that's what these other people are doing for their own brands. But the influencers themselves are not doing it for their brand. So I'm just helping these influencers understand that. I'm launching products for some of these influencers, or I'm helping these companies launch their products through influencers. But most of them, I'm just showing them the value, and then I'm getting the value out of it. So even if I'm launching products and you have 10 products, that's doing $1,000 a day off of your audience. Then you're making 10 grand a day. You multiply that times 30, you're making $300,000 per month.
Right. So
that's the game.
That is the game. But, you know, I see a lot of people on social media, fake followers. How does that work with AdWizR then if people have fake followers or they're purchasing their followers? Because I see a lot of artists do that to make it seem like they're bigger than they are. How does that work with AdWizR?
So we don't believe in fake followers because if they're not engaging, then you just look stupid, right? If you got 1 million followers and you're getting 40 comments, like, people are not dumb. The intelligence level is all the way up when it comes to social media. So if you actually have a page and you have a super low engaging audience, one, you look like people don't care about you. Two, people who see through you, you lose credibility because they're like, oh, you bought followers, so it just makes you fake. So all that stuff, it makes you lose credibility. So we don't believe in fake followers. Everything with us is about organic growth and figuring out ways to connect you to your right audience so you can turn that into revenue, right? The whole goal is to partner with us. We put a strategy behind you. We get you with the right team that's in-house of AdWizR, pair you up with the right team, and then come up with, you know, the right content that's going to intrigue your audience to want to follow you and nurture you throughout the process where they're actually going to want to do business with you, right? You forcefully down their throat, sales pitch, sales pitch, salesy. Nobody wants to support you, but if you entertain them, bring out emotion out of them and love and everything like that, or however you want to present yourself to the market, and then you put a product in front of them, or you passively talk about a product or indirectly promote a product, they're willing to support you and reciprocate. It's reciprocated. It's like, I'm going to give you value, and then in return, you know, if it's time for me to promote something, then you're more likely to buy. You know, and you base it on a percentage. It's like, if I have a million people who follow me and only 10% engage, which is super high, I would say like 5%, right? But out of that 5%, you get 1% to buy. That's still a huge amount of money that can get created, and especially through the retention rate of having those different people to be recurring customers for you.
Right. Now, Sec, let's get back to Pretty Ricky for a second in terms of the new music as you're telling me about, you know, your business model and what you do. One of the challenges that I find with the music industry, especially for veteran artists, they'll drop a new song, they'll put it on Spotify, they might even post it on their Instagram page, but that's it. What's your mindset and your mentality going into this Pretty Ricky album in terms of promoting it? How are you going to reach the people?
Oh, that's easy. That's easy. Definitely challenges, doing different challenges, you know, getting the kids involved from TikTok to Musical.ly and getting influencers involved, getting the blogs involved, and getting everybody involved that connects with the culture. And once you do that and you have a hit record behind that, it's game over.
Right. Now, how much of that, because it sounds like you guys have a plan, when we talk to other artists, they don't really necessarily have a plan in place. Is that just due to lack of awareness of what's going on in social media? Or, you know, what do you think contributes to that?
I think it's understanding business. This is a business. And if you want to execute right. on anything, you got to have a goal and you got to have goals and plans and projections in place. So I see it as a business. That's why, you know, guys like Diddy and Jay-Z and all these guys are moguls. And that's exactly what my name is going to be compared to once I'm finished with what the hell I'm about to do. And it just so right. happened that my group is a part of that, right? And right. and the guys in my group are smart as hell, too. So we're all our powers combined. And my know-how of social media marketing and seeing the way things are happening and the space is nothing that I can't do. And it's nothing I can do for my own group because I'm a part of it. So sky's the limit. It's really about how hard everybody really want to go. Like my game plan right. is, which is not even my game plan, which is going to happen within the next year or two. We're going to launch our own tour successfully. And we're going to have sold out shows and we're going to do it our damn self with no promoter.
Right.
So exactly what's going to happen. Jay-Z gave you the blueprint. Diddy gave you the blueprint. It's there. If you broke down what Jay-Z did to get his $1 billion, he had a product, right? He had a product, Duce. He had Ace of Spades, which is two products, all right? 310 million, 100 million for Duce. Boom. Next thing is you have a streaming service. Streaming service is there. That's a digital product. Simple. Create your digital product. You got it. Now that's residual coming in digitally. Then the next thing he did with his whole touring. He did touring. He partnered up with Live Nation. He figured out the ropes. And then after that, he launched his own stuff, which is Rock Nation. And that's he did his own tours by himself without no promoter. Right. So yeah. he everybody's giving you the blueprint is if you want to follow it. And a lot of times people try to do things once it's already done, but you have to pick and choose on what you want to do. Like right now, I don't feel like nobody could come in and do a champagne and just get the same success Jay-Z did with his champagne. I feel like that wave is over with. You know, not saying that somebody can't slip through the cracks and go viral and get the type of success he got, but I feel like that's already over with. You know, one of my best mentors taught me when you actually – When everybody is going and you go to, you already missed the train, right? You want to go when everybody's not going. You want to catch it before everybody else catch on. But if everybody's doing it right now, you're already too late. You know, Warren Buffett taught me that, you know, and he, I don't know him personally, but just to be, you know, studying an individual, reading his books and watching them online, that's a mentor, right? And a lot of people think they got to know people in person or personally to have them mentor them. So it's a quick jewel for everybody that's listening.
Right. Nice. You know, one of my favorite videos that you posted on social media, it's been floating around. It's one where you talk about empowering your staff and just giving them the ball, letting them run with it. And of course, I'm sure you did that when you were on the Millennium Tour. You were on the road a lot while the rest of your team was working. But when it comes to Pretty Ricky, what do you think you've learned from the corporate world that you can apply to, you know, the group? Because as opposed to Adwizar, who you're the CEO, in Pretty Ricky, you're just one-fourth of it.
Right, right. So, yeah, it was pretty hard at the beginning. It's still kind of hard at some times because I was always a quiet guy in Pretty Ricky. I never really cared about music. So, for me, I just really stood the background, and I really never said nothing at all because I just felt like everything was going to get handled. So now this time around, it's like if I'm putting my energy and effort into it, I know how much I make for an hour of my time, right? If I take how much money I make and I divide it into 24 hours and each hour is worth a certain amount of money. So I know how much I'm worth, right, per hour. So I know if I'm putting my time and energy into this, it has to equate to my work. Like it has to be worth it. So for me, I try to really come in and structure things the way I know how to structure things and bring what I'm good at to the table because I know about systems. I know about structure. I know about marketing. I know about, you know, a lot of things that we didn't have before as Pretty Ricky because everything was kind of ran a little bootleg-ish because my father was a street guy and he really didn't have any training on business or things like that. He was a smart hustler. but it was never structured as a real business. So I just tried to, you know, I came in and structured it as a real business, you know, from the way, from everything, from top to bottom, from credit cards to accounting to way we move and operations and, you know, accountability and like getting better every single time, having meetings before and after and strategizing and goals. And I basically help with all that stuff. And Baby Blue is good with that. Pleasure is good with that. So everybody has their own thing that they bring to the table. Like Pleasure, he's a really good people person. Through this tour, I learned a lot from each person in the group. Slick, I learned a lot from him. I learned a lot from Pleasure on, like, you know, how to take care of people and networking and partying and, like, how to party the right way. Like, I didn't know it was a strategy to party. And Pleasure kind of has that figured out on how to throw a party and make sure everybody good and the networking. And, like, I never really got into that type of stuff, but he taught me that. So if I ever wanted to do that, that's there. And then Baby Blue, you know, he's a real good strategy guy. Like, he can figure out, you know, different ways and make you think about different things in different ways and have a different perspective on things. So, and he's real, like, detailed. So everybody taught me a few things, man. And I think just together as a whole, we make a great team outside of music on the business side. But me coming in and structuring it and putting my team on it to make it run smoother.
Right. And Spec, I'll tell you what, one of the most frustrating things for me, and I can't really blame the artists, but a lot of my favorites, they just go on the road now. They just do shows. They don't even bother with the new music because, you know, they feel like, why bother? Who cares? But like for you, you're not only going to be recording new music and hitting the road, but you're doing this while you're making a lot of money with AdWizard. So what's the motivation behind bringing back the crew and bringing back Pretty Ricky?
Well, the motivation is back to business. We went to Justin Timberlake tour, and he's making $1.5 million a day. Every single time he hits the stage, he makes $1.5 million. And I know we're not there yet, and I know we can be what he is. So until I get there, I know I'm basically sacrificing until it's that time, because I know that time is coming. So it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, because we should be on the road every single year. We should be on tour every single year. That's just what it should be. And I believe that. So I know we have the music. I know we have the fans. And I know we have the business smarts to be a live nation, to be a rock nation. I know we could be that. So I understand that. So as a businessman, I sacrifice up front and I'm going to make it back on the back end.
That's dope. And finally, Spec, last question for you. And I like to ask this to all, you know, guests who join us on the podcast, which is, you know, do you remember the time when you first realized that, you know, your music career wasn't just for fun anymore, that it was an actual career?
That was when, really it was up to now. Ever since then, it was just fun because I really never got paid for my music. You know, my father was handling the funds. We put all our money together. He made some bad business decisions and kind of, you know, left me flat broke. So I never really cared about money. I always had my side hustles. Like I was in elementary making, you know, selling $10,000 worth of candy in third grade, right? And I had my middle school story, you know, selling candy. So I always had money, always had side hustles. I was doing Twitter accounts and things like that and making money off the side. It was top five in advertising dollars on the whole Twitter platform, 100 million users. Like, I didn't care about Pretty Ricky money. I never cared about it. I always did it just for fun. My passion was in performing on stage. And when I perform on stage, that's where I get my rush. That's where my love connects at. And my love tank gets filled from that. But other than that, you know, when I got back into the whole situation and I realized that, okay, now my father's no longer handling things, we have to not only replace him, but fix the things that we could have did better when he was running the group and now create that business structure. So long story short, when we got back into this whole thing and after me having a successful business, I kind of understood that, you know, if we're going to do this, let's do it right. Let's make sure we're putting the best of the best on the team. Let's make sure we got the best security. Let's make sure we got the best road manager. Let's make sure we got the best manager. Like, our manager is Brooke Payne, right? He founded New Edition. You know, he manages SWV. He manages, like, you know, all these, you know, huge, iconic groups. I felt like he understood groups, so Pleasure brought him to the table, and we hired him as management. I brought Neo Road Manager to the table, Toast, Santos. You know, Santos came to the table, and boom, now we got best of the best. Now we got the best security. So everything has to be top-notch, from the stylist to security to road manager to bus drivers to dancers. Like, we have a phenomenal dancers, the best of the best of dancers that mesh with us and our style, our vibe. So once I realized that, I was like, okay, the way I build the team for my company, we need to come and build the same exact type of team for this whole situation, and let's go crazy.
Nice. So, Spec, that's it for us on the podcast. We're out of time, but the Pretty Ricky album, and I know you guys are hitting the road again soon. When's that all happening?
So right now, everything's in talks right now. You know, either we're going to partner up with a label. We have some huge labels that's having conversations with us. But I'd rather just put together some top five marketers, and we just go crazy together, and everybody put their money where their mouth at. And we do some real marketing strategies and just go crazy. That's really my game plan. But, you know, I still got three other brothers that got to agree to it. So we still figuring all that stuff out, man. You know, I'm all about ownership.
Right. That's definitely a good thing. So, Spec, that's it for this episode of the podcast. I appreciate you for joining us. And, you know, we'll always support Pretty Ricky, Spectacular, AdWords, or everything you have going on. So just keep it going.
All right, man. For everybody who's listening, if you actually want to listen to my podcast, I have the Spectacular Experience, which is the number one rated podcast in the Apple Music store. I mean, in the music section on Apple Podcasts. So just check me out, download it, subscribe. You know, I try to drop a podcast every single week and talk about entrepreneurship and interviewing some top-of-the-line people, man.
All right, cool, Spec. Best of luck with everything, and take care.
All right, peace. Thank you.
All right, that was Spectacular on the podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed that. Guys, we'll be back next week with another special guest. We're going to keep it rolling till the end of the year, and maybe even more than that. But I'll see you guys next week, all right?